Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. I hope you are all doing fantastically well out there today. Studies say that around this time of the month in January, most people are already losing or have lost their New Year's resolve, whether that's breaking minor habits or making major lifestyle changes. So today's three guests are joining us to give us a boost, to help us pause for 60 minutes, to help us reflect so we can get back on track and remember how good and resolved we felt at the beginning of the year. My second guest today is Alan Locus. He's the founder and guiding teacher of the Community Meditation Center in New York City, and he's the author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. And there's a quote in the book I'll read with you, which I think is so true. He says, "Just about every mistake I have ever made and every unkind word I've ever spoken might have been avoided had I been more patient." We'll end today's show with Monique Alvarez, who wants us to celebrate the simple joys of life once a day. She says, "That sounds good, but how can you appreciate daily wonders when you have a toddler crying in your ear, a bill connecting, picking on the end of the phone, and needy clients demanding your attention? So how do you stop taking life too seriously and embrace the little things?" And Monique has spent time in 16 countries. She's learned to appreciate life. She knows how to embrace it and celebrate every day. And her new book, as you might expect, is called 365 Ways to Celebrate Life. But first, I'm pleased to welcome Susan Steinbrecher with me to the show. She's an internationally acclaimed speaker, executive coach, and president of CEO of Steinbrecher & Associates, Inc. Susan has served as a regular expert for MSNBC Small Business, Fox, and NBC TV. She's been on numerous radio shows and featured in Fortune Small Business Magazine, Dallas Business Journal, and CNN.com. She's also the author of the Amazon bestseller, Kensho, A Modern Awakening, Instigating Change in an Era of Global Renewal. Susan Steinbrecher, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And I know we're going to talk about, in the book, you have this section, you have a 29-step cheat sheet to breaking habits, old habits, and replacing them with new ones. And we're going to talk to about that in just a moment. But I want to, first of all, just look at the book, Kensho, A Modern Awakening, Instigating Change in an Era of Global Renewal. You champion the message that to become enlightened by the world around us is to ultimately discover oneself along the way. Talk to us a little bit about this book and why you wrote it, because it's quite different to any other book you've written.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You know, first of all, the name Kensho, for those that are not really aware of what that is, it literally means awakening or to gain sudden insight. And I felt really a compulsion to write this book, if you would, because in my work as a leadership consultant and an executive coach, I find that cynicism exists when there's what I call a little dust on our eyes, blocking our ability to really see what's possible within ourselves and others. And in today's challenging times, it is so easy to focus on the doom and gloom and what's wrong. But the problem with that is if we're focusing on what's wrong, it limits our ability to really see what's possible. And in my mind, the silver lining of all the chaos that we're in the middle of is that things are shifting and changing, but there's all kinds of awakenings and insights that can be gained. And so I really felt like I wanted to provide a book of hope and inspiration and to help people sort of navigate through the challenging times and to say, listen, all of this has a purpose. All of this, if you're willing to look at it, it's there. And so I interviewed several people from all over the globe, really, and asked them to share their stories and their insights. And each chapter has its unique theme, but the whole collection really is about this awakening and coming to understand why we're in the middle of the chaos that we're in.
Right. And you talk a lot about corporate social responsibility coming to our consciousness, and this is something we've talked about on our show before.
Right.
I want to jump right into these habit shifting, habit replacement, because I think this is something that gets in so many people's way, Susan, including mine.
That's right.
You know, habits become ingrained. I don't think a habit defines us necessarily. But if I said to you before the show, I find myself, at least, let's say with nutrition, for example, I'm either in really great habits or, you know, not so good habits. And it is habit. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And I think what happens is, what is a habit, right? It's something that you do over and over again so that it becomes ingrained, if you will, and becomes, quote unquote, the habit. So the truth is that when we keep practicing those behaviors, whatever those things are, so for example, let's say it's sugar. I mean, we think about a lot of people, especially coming off the holidays, eating probably more than they should have, and it can be very addictive, things like sugar. And so you're trying to say, you know what, I'm going to eat healthy, I'm not going to eat that stuff, and then before you know it, you're grabbing a candy bar or whatever. And so the first place to start on that is to recognize that you're triggered. So what is causing you in the middle of whatever you're doing to think candy bar, right? So I'll just give you a personal example. I was in the middle of writing a proposal for a client, and smack in the middle of writing this, all of a sudden I thought chocolate. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, why am I thinking chocolate at this moment? What is going on with me? Because it's not like I just walked past the candy store and I smelled the chocolate or I saw it or it caused me to think about it. I'm in the middle of writing a proposal. And the truth was, is I was at that moment, I was feeling some frustration or some, like, oh, I don't really want to do this anymore. I'm tired of this piece of work or whatever it is. And I caught myself thinking chocolate, and I went, okay, Susan, what is going on with you at this moment? And what it really was is I wanted something that was going to make me feel good in the moment because I wasn't feeling good in the moment. So I was triggered. So the thing that you want to do is to get conscious about the time that you find yourself drawn towards something, even though you've said yourself over and over again, I'm not going to do that. Get conscious about those times when you find yourself drawn to it, and then strategically think of what I call the replacement habit. So instead of me thinking chocolate and immediately eating chocolate, my strategically now I'm going, well, whenever I get myself in that situation, I, number one, come to terms with why am I feeling this way? What is the actual feeling that's evoking the thought of chocolate? And secondly, knowing that's probably going to happen to me again sometime in my life, what is going to be my replacement habit? And for me, it was to stop, get conscious about the feeling, go into a 5-minute meditation, and that helped me come to terms with it. And then get conscious about, do I still want to eat this? If I do, then go ahead and do with it and live with it. What would be the impact if I did? What would be the impact if I didn't? And so, in other words, talking yourself through it also creates some shifting there.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because there are different points of view out here that you, and a very common one, and I've heard it many, many times, is that you really don't break a habit. You do replace a habit, which is kind of what you just touched on here.
Right.
Do you believe we can just break a habit, or we have to have that replacement habit in place?
Well, I think it's a stair step. I think the first step is to think ahead of time of what you're going to replace it with so that when you are triggered, you have something ready to go so you won't be so in impulse of, in my example, eating chocolate. Then I think once you come to terms with more and more why you're feeling the way you do and you've used that replacement habit, I think ultimately you do shift it. Now, is that an overnight situation? No, it's not. So I think ultimately you can, but it is not an A to Z. There has to be stepping stones in between.
Mm. One thing that I was interested to read in your book, and there are 29 tips on this cheat sheet here in the book, but you say make a plan and don't start it right away.
Right. And the reason for that is, let's be realistic with that. In your plan, you want to write down some kind of a start date. Maybe realistically, you're not going to be focused and able to start that for a week or for two. But because what happens is people say, well, starting today, I'm going to work out, you know, 2 hours, or I'm going to work out 3 days a week. You're probably not. You're not ready. You need to think through, what will I need to do to accomplish that working out 3 days a week, let's say, as an example. Do I need to first get some, if I'm going to decide I'm going to run, let's say, do I need to first think about running shoes? Do I need to get a fitting for that? Do I have the right clothes? Have I decided what time of the day is going to work best? So to start at the moment, often we're not really ready. And then when we don't do it, when we say we will, we beat ourselves up. So that's what we mean by don't necessarily start at that moment. Start when you're really ready.
Right.
And you have a start date, and you have a quit date potentially. So, and then you want to post it up on the wall or put it visually in front of you to remind you. It takes, in other words, some planning and preparation to get ready to do it.
Right. And almost make it like another project is what I find I have to do.
Me as well.
Because I'll usually get projects done, but if I just say, oh, I'm going to change this, it's too easy not to. So being in the right frame of mind and planning, having a plan is really important. I thought this was key too, because this is something, again, I do when I start a new project, is you said write down all the obstacles.
That's right. Because, again, like I mentioned earlier with my chocolate idea, my guess is prediction would be that I'm going to think chocolate again when I'm not necessarily staring at it, you know? And so that's where, when you write down the obstacles, I find myself thinking about chocolate when I'm stressed. I find myself thinking about that when I'm feeling lonely. I find myself, you know, think about the times when you think, again, you're going to be triggered, and then thinking about what that actual replacement may be. You know, reflect on the times that you failed and why you did. Figure out what stopped you from succeeding. Writing down every obstacle that happens to you allows you to be planful and proactive and think about, you know, listen, it could happen, and so what am I going to do when it does happen? Then when it does happen, you already have your replacement habit in place, you already have a plan in place, and you feel armed and empowered with what to do at the moment.
Right. Now, if we're procrastinating on making the changes we promised, you know, on January 1st we were going to make, I mean, procrastination itself can be a habit, can't it?
Yes, it really can. You know, the way I look at it this way, you really need to come to terms with, why are you wanting to replace that habit? Why is it you want to lose the 10 pounds? Why is it you want to quit smoking? What is the WIFM? What's in it for me to do that? And if you can't get clear on that from the very beginning, it's not going to be sustainable, because you don't even know why you're doing it. And by the way, it's nice to do it for other people, but what's really going to be important is for you to do it for yourself. In terms of a long-term sustainable motivation, you have to come to terms for, what am I trying to go towards? And in some cases, people find what we call away from. People don't want this, so they're going to do this. What's even more powerful is, tell me what you want to have happen, and that's why you're making this change. And remind yourself of that frequently. So let's say, for example, someone wants to quit smoking for their children. For the health of their children, for their health, they want to be around when their children grow older, that kind of thing. Then posting up pictures of the children with a reminder, someplace where you can see that every single day, reminds you and keeps you on track. Put another picture in your wallet, something on your desk that reminds you of breaking that habit and what you're going to gain by doing so. Those are all the little tricks that really helps you stay with it. But the motivation's critical. If you cannot identify why you're doing it in the first place, it's not going to be a sustainable strategy.
Right, and it ultimately has to be for ourselves.
Absolutely right.
Saboteurs, let's talk about that. Now, you know, I'm thinking of a couple of friends that I spent a weekend with a few weeks ago, and they both work from home. And when one is having a hard time on their project, they tend to try and distract the other one.
Right.
And they're not intentionally sabotaging, obviously, but it is detrimental to somebody who's working at home if your spouse is coming in saying, oh, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want to come to the mall with me? Do you want to come out and play?
That's exactly right. And there will always be those people or their friend that they see you losing weight, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, let's go out to happy hour. And then when you choose your salad with dressing on the side along with your drink, or let's say as your snack instead of the deep fried, you know, food, they criticize it. Well, just know that the person may be in fear, or they may be feeling threatened. And we would love for people to be evolved enough to where they would want us to be successful, but not everybody is in that space. So the more that you can have compassion for why the person is saying what they're saying and trying to push the fried, deep fried cheese on you or whatever, when you're really trying to stick to eating your salad or that kind of thing, the more that you can have some compassion around where that person is and still hold the space of you sticking to your goals. And you can say, I know, I really appreciate you would like me to have that. I'm going to make a different choice at this moment. I'm totally okay with you making the choice that you need to make. For me, that's not what I need to be doing right now, and I appreciate your support.
Right.
That'll pretty much stop it.
Right.
Because they're going to go, oh, well, yeah, of course, you know, and drop it.
Right. And rewards, you talk about rewards, and this is something I think sometimes we forget to do for ourselves, to reward ourselves and to take it one urge at a time. You defeat our habit one urge at a time.
Exactly. And I think all those little, hey, you know what, give myself a star. I stuck to my eating plan today as I said I would. And as silly as that may sound, for something like dieting, I always recommend a food journal where you actually get conscious about everything that you've written, and you can also see patterns. But at the end of the day, you know, you've written your food down, let's say, and at the end of the day, you give yourself a gold star because you actually stuck to the plan. Those little things mean a lot. Or if it's dieting and you're reaching a certain goal, then obviously you don't want to reward with food, right? So do something that also takes care of self. Like if I lose this many pounds by this date, then I'm going to give myself a manicure or a pedicure. I'm going to go get a spa treatment. Doing things that celebrate the milestone checks along the way really keep you positive.
Yeah. And one thing you talk about, which I'd never really thought about with breaking a habit before, is getting plenty of rest. Because obviously, yeah, if we're tired, we're more tempted to slide back on the comfort wagon, whatever that may be.
That's right. We're more vulnerable. I mean, we're more vulnerable. And it's like, okay, what the heck? I'm tired. I don't care. I'm just going to do this or I'm just going to do that. Yeah, I know it's not good for me. But you know what? It goes back to, I want to feel good, and I want to feel good right this minute. And I know that thing is going to give me that instant gratification. And then, of course, we succumb to that, and then later on we beat ourselves up for doing it. So just being, you know, the more that you're rested and the better you feel, the more resolve and resiliency you're going to have.
Yeah. And, you know, all three of my guests today are talking about three common things throughout their work. Patience, stop multitasking, and be present.
Oh boy, I'm big on that too.
Yeah, be present and be mindful. So I know you talk in the book, Ken Show, about multitasking. Give us your viewpoint on that.
What we know from all the latest brain science out there, neuroplasticity is kind of the new word, and that really, so welcome to the age of neuroplasticity. This is what research has now told us, how much the brain is functioning and how much we use it and what we don't use of it, and how we know that new experiences create new neural pathways in the brain. Well, all the brain scientists are telling you that this we think we're getting more done by the multitasking, and the reality is we're just short-circuiting things. You know, we get a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but we don't put enough focus to it. So, for example, skimming through an email really quickly. Someone sends you an email. It's a couple of paragraphs long. You skim through. You don't really pick up the detail. You respond right away with, yeah, I'll look at that. And then before you know it, you miss something key, and they're coming back to you again and again and again. So you think you're saving time. We're not. We're actually now we're readdressing that email four more times because we didn't read it thoroughly the first time. So what we're learning is that in order to really build the brain power, if you will, you really need to have an immense amount of focus to a given task. And if you do that, you will actually complete it faster with higher quality. You won't be going back and redoing it again. And then you're actually building the strategic agility in the brain at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So for all those reasons, it's a good thing. You know, the speed thing we're all caught up into, and all of us are there. It's just, I think we all know intuitively it's not working, but we get addicted to the fact of being able to check off things on the to-do list and feel good that we knocked all this stuff out.
Right.
Except for later when we have to redo four of them because
we didn't do it well. Yeah, and you talk, I mean, all through this, it's about being mindful, being patient with ourselves and focusing.
Yes.
And, you know, lack of focus is a habit, just as focusing is a habit, and it can be learned. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Susan?
I think in Ken's show, the idea again of this book was to provide all this new awareness and new learning and to put some real ideas and inspiration around sort of the chaos that I know a lot of people are feeling. And I really hope people have the opportunity to review this. And if they're excited about what they've heard today and they want to know more, going to our website, they'll see some very exciting things we're doing right now around Ken Show. And they can go to the website of steinbrecher.com, and that's steinbrecher.com, steinbrecher.com.
Great, thank you. And again, Kensho means, it's a Japanese term from the Zen tradition. It means enlightenment or awakening. So I thank you so much for being with us, Susan. Appreciate
Absolutely,
it.
Vicky. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure.
Have a great day now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And again, my guest there, Susan Steinbrecher with Joanne Moyle and her book, Kensho, A Modern Awakening, Instigating Change in an Era of Global Renewal. And you'll find that 29 habit checklist, how to break it, right here in this book. Whoops. All right, we're going to come right back after I finish dropping everything. And my next guest is Alan Locus. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
Coming next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, a man and a woman embark on separate journeys into the wild and find themselves. Kara Duenterl and Tom Ryan share their individual stories about life, love, and friendship, and how their adventures with a wolf named Inyo and a dog named Atticus changed their lives forever. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow Vicky on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Time for something different. Time for Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Alan Locus. He's the founder and guiding teacher of the Community Meditation Center in New York City. His writing has appeared in Tricycle Magazine, The Huffington Post, BeliefNet, Backstage Newspaper, and the anthology Audacious Creativity. I like the sound of that. Alan's taught at many places, including Columbia University Teachers College, Marymount College, the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and the list goes on there. And he's the author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living, and Pocket Peace, Effective Practices for Enlightened Living. Alan Locus, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm just delighted to be here with you.
Well, I loved in the book, there's a quote by William Shakespeare. He says, "How poor are they that have not patience."
Yes, indeed.
And I want to start with a quote from the book. You were out at dinner with a friend of yours, and she said something that resonated with you and made you test your patience because you wanted to run down and run away and start writing this. But this also resonated with me, and I'm sure it will resonate with many of our listeners. And she said to you, "Just about every mistake I've ever made and every unkind word I've ever spoken might have been avoided if I'd been more patient." So talk to us a little about that, if you would.
Well, isn't that an incredible statement? She said that, and I just almost felt a chill, and I actually asked her if she would repeat what she just said. I just thought it was so on target, you know, the idea that every mistake I have ever made and every unkind word I have ever spoken might have been avoided if I had been more patient. Certainly that applied to me. And, you know, as you see there in the book, I excused myself and I went to the computer and I jotted that down. And as you said, I actually did have to be rather patient because I wanted to continue writing, which would have been rude at that time. But it was that moment, you know, every so often something happens in our lives and we just say, oh, this is it. This is a moment when something different is going to happen. And when I heard that, when I felt it within me, I said there just have to be so many more people like the two of us who could say exactly the same thing. And can you imagine if there was a way for us to reduce the unkind words that just sort of slip out of our mouth? And I'm not suggesting that we often speak unkindly to others, but we do slip from time to time.
Yeah, sometimes it would be better to say nothing.
Or to say nothing, or at least if there could be a pause, if we learned how to create a pause between, you know, to use the modern vernacular, someone pushes our buttons. If we knew how to realize that that button just got pushed, and instead of reacting to it and wanting to strike back, we might want to strike back, but that's different than actually striking back. And if there could just be a moment when we stopped and became aware of what was going on within ourselves, that's really what patience is. You know, if I might just add this, we use a very strange language when it comes to the subject of patience. We say of ourselves, for instance, "I'm not a very patient person," or "I've lost my patience." And that sounds as if patience is this thing or a commodity of some sort that I can lose, or I might find it. And that's really not what patience is. Patience and impatience are just feelings that arise in a given moment under certain circumstances. And, of course, those circumstances would be different for all of us. But impatience arises in a moment because of a particular circumstance. Now, if we could be aware within ourselves that impatience is arising right now, and maybe it's happening very quickly, so I develop certain skills. And, you know, I want to be really truthful about this. There is work involved in doing this. Someone who experiences a lot of impatience and has done so for 30, 40 years or more is not suddenly just going to become a patient person because they would like to.
No, and I mean, I would expect that we'd expect to work on that, and this is what your book is all about. But I want to ask you this, because I saw in the material that people may confuse patients with suppressed anger or suppressed frustration, and we're so often told today, it got me thinking, you know, we're so often told today, you know, speak your mind and spit it out and be authentic. And I think there's probably an element of truth that some people do see patients as or confuse patients with suppression. So how would you define the difference there, Alan?
Well, that's an important point that you're bringing up. We don't ever want to suppress feelings. But what we're really looking to do is to become aware of feelings. When we become aware of feelings, we realize that we don't necessarily have to act upon them. And that's a very important distinction. You know, I can feel, oh, I'm so angry, I could just murder that person. But that doesn't mean that we should actually do that. In fact, it would be rather unwise to do that. So a suppression of feelings is about denying what one is feeling. And again, we don't want to do that. To be aware of feelings is something that's quite different. We can be, it's as if we create a space and we say, oh, now that's interesting. See Vicky feeling very angry. Isn't that interesting? Now, what happens then is that there's no ownership. It's not, I am angry. You put some space in there, and it says, see Vicky, or in my case, see Alan, really experiencing anger. In fact, the anger is really intense. And then it's just, isn't that interesting? Because what we have learned now through research, and this was actually suggested more than 2,500 years ago by the Buddha, and that is that thoughts, feelings, and sensations always do the same thing. They arise and they die away, followed by the next. Arise, die away, arise, die away. It often doesn't seem that way because we cling to a certain feeling and we begin to write a scenario. Well, of course I'm angry. The way he spoke to me, that is so rude and outrageous. He always does that. Who does he think he is? You know, I can do that all day. I can do that for weeks. And in fact, I can do that for a lifetime. But is that really what I want to be doing? Right. Am I creating a sense of happiness and joy for myself? Or am I just creating an ongoing stress and distress and turmoil and levels of suffering?
Right.
So
right.
That's why we try to look at what is going on within us, but not to deny it and not to suppress those feelings, but just to see, okay, what do I want to act on and what do I want to just not act on at the moment?
Right.
And that's different.
Right. Good explanation there. I want to talk about a couple of things. We have about 5 minutes left. You talk about recent research conducted with 1,000 children starting at their birth through their first 32 years. And this was quite interesting to me. Results showed that those who ranked the lowest in patience and self-control, those who were easily frustrated, were approximately 3 times more likely to have multiple health issues, which we might expect. But they were also 3 times more likely to have addiction problems, lower incomes, and to commit crimes. What did you take away from that?
Well, you know, I think there are a number of things to look at here, and certain conclusions can be drawn from that, but I would also be careful about the conclusions that we draw. The fact that someone experiences impatience, there's no way to measure the average, but let's just say if someone is aware that they're experiencing impatience or anger more than they would really like, there can be underlying causes for that. And the most likely underlying causes would be levels of fear and levels of unhappiness. So If someone is experiencing a great deal of unhappiness, in our society especially, what do they look to do? They look to go out and find things, search for things that will bring them happiness. What they have not learned yet is even if they do find momentary happiness, it's only going to be momentary. They haven't done anything to create something within that is going to be able to let them experience sustained happiness.
Mm-hmm.
No one is happy all the time. That's unrealistic. But, you know, again, in our society, we're encouraged to go out and to buy this. And as one of your previous guests was alluding to, get the fastest, get the best, get the shiniest. And, yeah, there's usually a little jolt of joy, but then it dies away.
It's very temporary,
but,
isn't it?
Yeah. We have, and of course, then what do? Then we look to do that again because that brought me happiness. So if iPad 2 was bringing me joy, then iPad 3 is obviously going to bring me even more joy. But it can't sustain itself. Everything is always changing.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to look within and look to start to eliminate, to weaken the ways in which we cause ourselves unhappiness.
Right.
Which is a slightly different approach.
And again, like we talked about with breaking habits, be mindful of our triggers. So do we have to start being patient with ourselves? Because I'm impatient with myself.
Yeah.
I'm probably more patient with other people than myself. But should it begin with ourselves, Alan?
Absolutely. I think that even the idea that you just said that I can be more patient with others than I am with myself, what we're finding now, again, with research is that actually patience that I'm practicing with others? What we're tending to see now is that unless I really know from within, empirically, what the experience of patience is, and I can only know that if I practice patience with myself, I'm not necessarily really being patient with others. Maybe I'm being tolerant, maybe I'm enduring, but real patience and becoming a patient person, again, that's going to take some work. But I also want to add to that even in the first minute of beginning to work on patience, one can see really dramatic results. And you learn skills. Some of them are those basic skills that we learn as children. Take a deep breath, count to 10. They're surfacey and they can seem trite, but they can also be very significant in a given moment. And then we work on ourselves. Now, you know, meditation is a great practice for someone trying to become a more patient person.
Right.
If the word meditation doesn't sit well, you know, just think of greater awareness, greater mindfulness, a sense of being more awake to what is actually happening inside of oneself. That's where we have to look.
And it's a much nicer way to live. Alan, I really appreciate you being with us today. We're right at the end of our segment. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, let's try this. We often think that if only this was different, or if only that was different, or if my boss was kinder, then I would be happier. Try this thought. Only I can destroy my peace, and I choose not to do so. And just say that throughout the day. Remind yourself, no matter what is going on, I am the only one who can destroy my peace. And I'm going to make the decision not to do so.
Sounds good to me. Alan Locus, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And Alan's book is called Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. And you can find out more about Alan and his work at his website, cmcnewyork.org, cmcnewyork.org. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Monique Alvarez, and she's going to share some ways to celebrate life every day. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
All we need is just a little patience. Said sugar, make it slow, and we come together fine. All we need is just a little patience.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job, and building your business. Overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. We are celebrating. We're celebrating life today. My next guest is Monique Alvarez. She's the author of the new book, Celebrate Life 365 Ways. Monique has experienced life in 16 countries, and she's joining us today to share her simple tips to enjoy everything the world and even our own neighborhoods has to offer. Monique Alvarez, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure too. And I have to say that I looked at your Twitter feed and I saw your little bio there at the top of the Twitter feed. It could have been mine because you say
oh, nice.
You say I'm a lover of travel, cultures, food, playing outside, and the overall savoring of life. And I thought that is really cool, and that really could be my bio there too. So tell us.
Well, then it makes sense that we're talking.
Yes, yeah. So we're going to look at the book in just a moment. It's a very tiny book to just keep by your desk or your bedside or, you know, on a cocktail table somewhere so you can pick up one day and think, you know, how am I going to celebrate today? But I want to just go back a few years because you went to Albania at the age of 22, turned into a 5-year journey. Volunteering with orphanages. Tell us about that time in your life and how it led to where you are today.
Well, that time in my life living overseas, it was so critical for me because I'm from a small town and all of my family lives in that same small town. And so it was really my first opportunity to really spread my wings and fly and to explore myself and the world at the same time and find out what I enjoy and what I'm passionate about. And what I found after coming back to the States is that time was so necessary because it laid the foundation and it helped me create what was most important and how I wanted to arrange the rest of my life going forward.
And so I loved the intro to this book because you wrote a book. You said, I'm not a writer. tell us about the journey that led to this book, because you and your husband are both self-employed. You're very entrepreneurial. But all through this, you kept saying, I'm not a writer. How can I write a book? I'm not a writer.
Yes, it's true. I had this idea in my mind that, you know, a writer was one that wrote a 1,000-page book, and it was a great, you know, English literature masterpiece, and I never really excelled in grammar or spelling in school, and so I allowed these things to really define me. And so what I found is I had all of these experiences and ideas bottled up inside me, and I kept holding it back because I thought that I couldn't write it if I wasn't good at every aspect of writing or compiling a book. And thankfully for, you know, my dad and my husband and various people in my life, they just kept encouraging me to let it out. And it doesn't matter if it's perfect. We have to find a way to express ourselves.
Yeah. I'm going to read this to our listeners. The final thoughts you say I want to leave you with. This is in the introduction to the book. You say you don't have to be a writer to write a book. You don't have to be an artist to paint. You don't have to be a chef to cook. But if you have an idea, inspiration, passion, whatever you want to call it, you can walk it out. I like that a lot. So I wanted to talk about a quote that I saw from you. You say, serving up inspiration, love, and hope to those who are hungry for more is your destiny. Talk to us a little about that.
Well, I feel like everybody going through life, we're all basically searching for maybe what we're here for, what our contribution is. And what I've come to believe about myself is that sometimes it's just about sharing the beauty that I see or I experience. And if I can offer that inspiration, that thing that lit me up or made it put a smile on my face, if I can share that with somebody else, then I feel satisfied with my life. I feel like that is why I'm here. Because it's easy to have so many things and to have so many things going right in our life, but if we don't stop and acknowledge them, then we lose the power, the impact of it. And so I feel like that is my calling, to serve up the inspiration and just to offer those reminders that all is well and life is good.
Yeah, and how much do you think your travel influenced you and experience with other cultures influenced you, Monique?
It influenced me greatly. I had an opportunity to experience contrast and differences. And what I found is as I experienced those, I also was being shown what was similar. What do we all have in common? And oftentimes to really appreciate health, we have to have experienced the sickness. And sometimes to really appreciate family, you might be alone. And so when I experienced those contrasts, you know, being by myself and traveling and interacting with people that I had not been introduced to up until that time, I found that it just opened up so many new avenues and so many new worlds to me, and I could greater appreciate all of it.
Yeah, I don't think you can travel, especially to the kind of countries that you went to and orphanages that you saw. I don't think you can go to those places and not be changed forever.
I agree. It's not a temporary experience, or this is nice for right now, or this is, you know, a cool thing to mention to people, but it really rocks your foundation. It completely changes your life forever.
Mm. So let's look at some of the ways, and this book is literally 365 ways to celebrate life. It's numbered throughout the book, and it's just a line or two of what you can do to celebrate life today. Tell me some of the favorite ways that you like to celebrate.
Well, some of my favorites, you know, we'll start with my obvious favorite, anything that revolves around food. And I really gained a greater appreciation for food when I traveled overseas, because so much time and love and care is put into the preparation and sharing of food. And so, for example, you know, number 65, savor meals with those you love. It kind of brings me back and reminds me about how awesome it was to spend 2 hours in a kitchen with somebody while they prepared and telling stories and really savoring it, not rushing through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, while we're on number 65, I'm going to read number 66, because, you know, these ideas are not all time-consuming ideas. I mean, this one, number 66, says, stop comparing yourself to others. No one can compare to you. I mean, that doesn't take much time to do that.
That's right. And it takes no money.
And no money. And it's very valuable because we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to others.
Absolutely. And, you know, I share with people all the time that I wrote these for myself first and foremost because I have to remind myself of the same thing. No one is exempt from needing reminders of these things because we can, you know, get off track or get discouraged or whatever. But you're right, that right there. And when I can appreciate myself and my own uniqueness, then I have a greater appreciation for the other people in my life and the unique role they play.
Yeah. I you know, one of the best celebrations I have when I look back over time was when I worked in the bank, and one day all of my they knew I was working full time and I was going to school full time, and they came to work on my birthday, and each one of them had cooked a dish for me to take home for dinner that night to share with my then husband, and I thought that was so cool.
Oh, that is so thoughtful.
Yeah. Another one
of have to steal that idea.
Yes, yeah. Another one of my favorites. I was thinking about what my favorite ways are to take a little moment for myself, and I have this beautiful King George teapot and cups and tray that my mother bought for me in England, and I very carefully packaged it and I handheld it all the way home to America because it's my very special teapot, and I just bring it down when I need a little lift some days. Or when I just want to really sit and savor the moment, and I call it my special moments teapot.
Yes, I love that.
So share some other ways that you like to celebrate.
Another way I like to celebrate is spending time with my pet. I have a little doggy named Charlie Parker, so whether it's just giving him a belly rug or playing with him or going for a walk, that's one of my favorites. And I think another one that my husband has really caused me to focus on is spending more time in nature.
Yeah.
I think I noticed it in myself, and I noticed it in our society at large, that we have become so far removed from nature. And it's amazing how refreshed and how clear-minded and just rejuvenated I feel when I'm in nature.
Yeah,
and more closely connected.
I would totally agree with you on that. It is my little sanity break. You know, I have a border collie who has to go long, long walks every day, and I'm glad because it gets me out even during the busiest times. And just I can find myself really stressed or frustrated or just too focused, you know, when you sit and don't move for a while. And just 5 minutes out in nature listening to the birds. And these are all simple ideas that you share in the book. You know, just listen to the birds. In the morning, I walk on the beach, and part of the beach is covered with Canadian geese usually. And I say to them every morning, good morning, ladies. What's the gossip today?
It completely changes, you know, it like resets our moment, or if it's in the morning, it gets us off to a right start.
Right. So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Monique, about celebrating life every day. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be time consuming. It doesn't have to even take a great deal of effort.
No, it doesn't. And I'm afraid that a lot of us have been fooled into thinking that being happy and enjoying life requires a lot more than it does. And I believe the thought that I want to leave everyone with is 115. And it says, until you are who you really are, there will be an unfillable void. And that is something that I know that my husband and I are making our mantra this year, and I encourage everyone to do. It's be who you really are, not what's expected, not what you think everyone else would be happy with, but tap into who you really are, because until we do that, everything else, it won't cut it.
I love it. Until you are who you really are, there will be an unfillable void. And I'm going to read the next one out too, because it's quick and easy. Make some good old-fashioned s'mores.
Yes.
Where can listeners find out more about you, Monique?
They can find out more about me on my website. It's Celebrate Life 365ways.com.
Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Vicky.
All right, so before we go today, a couple of quick things. I have a couple of workshops coming up that I wanted just to let you know about. Blogging 101, how to use your blog to establish yourself as an expert is one of them. And writing that gets results, it's all about story, is another. So whether you're writing for a group or organization, for business, hobby, pleasure, there's writing that works and writing that doesn't come. If you're interested in finding out more, just drop me an email at info@conversationslive.net or at 800-495-7617. And I'm going to close out today's show with a dedication. Last week, a good friend of mine passed away. She was a strong, intellectually smart woman. She had a great sense of humor. She made a significant difference in the lives of hundreds of people. And in spite of some difficult personal challenges, she never, ever lost her passion for educating her students and for her beloved dogs, Chewy and Jackson. And she passed very suddenly, very unexpectedly. And there was no warning, no second chance, not even a hint that there would be no tomorrow for her. And I share this with you because it's a harsh reminder to me just how fleeting this life is. And sometimes we don't have that second chance to tell somebody that you appreciate them or that you love them or that they are making a difference in this world. And I sign off every week with the same four words. And this week, they took a whole new, deeper meaning for me. And they're words that I strive to live by and encourage others to do so too. And I sign off this week with those same four words that have even deeper meaning because I believe the best way that we can honor those who've died too young is to stand tall, to own our own truth, and to live well, live strong. This show is dedicated to the memory
of Paula Froud.
Dr. Paula Froud.
If it be your will that I speak no more, and my voice be still as it was before, I will speak no more. I shall abide.